Chapter 17.
I find it interesting that Town Wee has never held it against Fett for attacking Kamino. Either he's her favorite unfinished project, or there's something else we don't know.
Jang Skirata, musing on the motives of Kaminoans. Lan Shevu's apartment, Port Quarter, Coruscant.
It's really kind of you to put me up, sir.
Ben tried to take up as little room as possible on Captain Shevu's sofa. It wasn't just awkwardness about intruding on someone's privacy. Ben found himself trying to hide. Not in the Force, but from it. Ideally, he'd have gone home with Mom. But that meant Dad, too, and he simply couldn't face him yet.
You're not really afraid of your dad, are you?
Shevu handed him a plate of breadsticks filled with fruit preserves, which was a weird combination, but he seemed to leave the proper cooking to his girlfriend.
He seems such a nice guy.
He is, said Ben. But did you ever think your parents knew everything you were thinking, and everything you'd done wrong just by looking at you?
All the time.
Jedi parents really can. Well, nearly.
Shevu's opinion of Jason showed on his face now that he was off duty.
I think Master Skywalker would be angry with the person who made you do it, not you.
Oh, he's angry enough with Jason.
Sorry, I shouldn't put you on the spot about your family. It's not fair. Forget I said it.
I think I did the right thing for the wrong reasons.
Well, beats doing the wrong thing for the right reasons. Classic excuse, that one. I was a cop.
I know.
Do you want to stay in the GAG?
I miss CSF, actually. I miss catching real criminals and showing tourists the way to the rotunda.
He wandered into the kitchen, and there was a banging and clattering of dishes. He came back with a glass of juice and drank it in two gulps.
You sure you're all right?
Oh, yeah. Look, I'll be out of your way as soon as I can.
No rush. Shula thinks it's great that you wash the dishes.
Shevu's girlfriend said he was a nice, polite boy. Ben thought that providing a safe haven for him was worth help with the chores, at the very least.
I can force-dry them, too.
Shevu laughed and handed him the remote control for the lights. Ben got the feeling that Shevu was happier keeping an eye on him in the aftermath of the assassination because he didn't approve of the Jedi habit of letting children carry weapons and fight. As far as he was concerned, Ben shouldn't have been serving in the front lines before he was at least 18. He was just too polite to say that he thought Jedi made bad parents.
Poor Mom.
Ben slept. He had a few odd dreams about Lacalf that woke him up, and the grief when he woke up properly and remembered his comrade was dead was painful. He lay wondering about Lacalf's folks and how they were coping, and then he thought he drifted off again because he could hear, no, he could feel a voice in his head asking where he was. He sat up. He knew he was fully awake, because he could see the environment control light on the wall, winking faint red every 10 seconds. It took him a while to work out why he knew the voice but couldn't put a face to it when he shut his eyes again. It was the Sith ship. He didn't know where it was, but it was calling him. It wanted to know where he was. Sith sphere. Color orange. No index number. Last known registered owner, Lumia. Ben decided to treat it like a stolen speeder, the way Shevu would. I owe Jason this. He'd never have done these things without Lumia twisting his mind. Shows he's not half as clever as he thinks he is. Mom would probably try to talk him out of it. But they'd reached an understanding now that he had to do things his own way, because she couldn't expect anything else from him, given his pedigree. Ben pulled on his clothes, left a scribbled flimsy note for Shevu, and set off for the GAG compound to liberate an unmarked long-range speeder. The nice thing about being the secret police was that, provided you signed out the kit, nobody asked you what you planned to do with it. And it was legitimate police business to catch criminals. It was only when he fumbled in his pocket for his ID that he realized he'd left his vibroblade at Chevu's. He hoped he wouldn't need his mom's luck tonight. Skywalker's apartment, Coruscant. Luke was asleep when Mara got back, and she was relieved. It saved a lot of awkward questions. She peered through the doors, counted the seconds between rasping snores, and decided he was out cold.
Good.
She slipped past the bed and selected her favorite working clothes, dark gray fatigues with plenty of pockets for storing small weapons and ammo. She had no idea how long it would take to run Jason to ground, so she opted to pack for a mission, as much as she could cram into her backpack.
I've got to stick on his tail now. I've got to strike when I can.
She could track Lumia, and he was still in touch with her. If she hung around Lumia, then she'd eventually get Jason where she wanted him, away from the genteel, constitutional way of doing things on Coruscant. Jason had said he had an appointment, too, and while it might have been another of his lies, the chances were that he'd want to tell Lumia that Mara was onto them.
I'll save you the trouble.
She made a conscious effort not to see Leia's face in her mind's eye, and somehow she'd erased poor Han from this altogether. It wasn't that Father's feelings didn't matter, but she had a better idea of the pain Leia would go through. However old kids got, the memory of them as newborns never faded. It might be true for dads as well, but Mara only knew what a mother felt, and that was bad enough. She checked her datapad for the transponder trace. Ben's showed he was still at Chevu's, and so he was one factor she didn't have to worry about. Lumia's transponder indicated she was heading for the Perlemian node just off Coruscant. If Jason wasn't with her, Mara thought, she might well get a lead to one of her bolt holes. In the assassination business, every scrap of data on a target's habits and movements was valuable. It would be worth the journey, and the technician at the base was used to Jedi booking out flight time in stealth X's. She didn't have to fill out any forms that said her mission was to kill the Joint Chief of State. Mara closed the inner doors to keep the light in the hallway from waking Luke, and paused at the apartment's front entrance.
Okay, I'll risk it. If he wakes up, though, it'll be another argument.
She put down her pack and tiptoed back into the bedroom, leaned over Luke, still snoring like a turbo saw, and kissed his forehead as lightly as she could. He grunted.
Sorry, I never spotted it,
she mouthed at him.
But better late than never.
Luke grunted again, and his eyelids twitched. Mara debated whether to give him a little force touch deep in his mind and see if she could get him to smile in his sleep, but decided she was pushing her luck, and Jason probably had a head start on her. Lumia definitely did. Mara paused at the doors and left a flimsy note stuck on them.
Gone hunting for a few days. Don't be mad at me, farm boy.
There was no need to say who the quarry was. She'd have a hard enough time explaining when she returned. Sith Meditation Sphere, Perlemian Trade Route.
Hush,
Lumia said aloud.
I have no idea if he can hear you.
The meditation sphere had developed an annoying habit of asking her questions. It wanted to know why there were so few. Lumia wasn't sure where to begin with such a vague question. The ship had been buried on Zeost for more time than it wanted to remember, it told her, and now it was curious to know where all the Dark Ones had gone.
"It's a long story," Lumia said. "We haven't been in the Ascendant for a long time. Jason Solo will change all that."
"What about the others?"
"Oh, Alima?"
"She comes and goes, broken, but sometimes very happy." It was a good description of Alima's almost bipolar moods. Murderous, bitter obsession, punctuated by highs of murderous, triumphant obsession. The sphere was very attuned to feelings, it seemed. Maybe it could sense darkness anywhere, like a homing beacon, so that it could go to the aid of Sith in difficulty.
"I told her to tail Jason, but I should have known better than to rely on a psychiatric case. But who else is there? Apart from me, that is."
"Plenty of little darknesses. The two with my flame." Lumia repeated it to herself.
"Flame. Ah, red hair. Mara Jade Skywalker. She was the Emperor's hand, an agent for the dark side, just like me. The boy is her son."
"You darknesses should never fight. So few of you. I stopped her fighting."
"You certainly did."
It was fascinating that the ship could still sense the dark side in Mara, even though she'd abandoned her roots. But to taste it in Ben, too, it might have been in his genes. Or perhaps the ship was reacting to his new career as a state assassin. Like mother, like son. Lumia almost thought she'd written off Ben too soon.
"Do you sense Dark Ones near?"
"The Broken One is looking for the Lord-to-be."
"If she looks as if she's going to interfere, remove her, dark or not."
Lumia had told Alima to track Jason, but now wasn't the best time for Alima to interfere.
"Jason Solo is our priority."
The ship went quiet. It was impossible to get an accurate sense of speed in a vessel with no instruments in hyperspace, but she could measure the duration of the journey on her chrono, and the ship could tell her where its equivalent location was in real space. "Past Arcania. Past Chaswa." Where was Jason going? Not Zeost, unless he was taking an extraordinary route. He'd be brushing the Roche sector if he dropped out of hyperspace, and for a moment she wondered if he was simply panicking about the possibility of the Roche-Mandalorian arms deal turning the war in the Confederation's favor and going to the Verpine to undermine the pact. But that was routine work for minions, for his admirals and agents, and she'd be annoyed if he was wasting his energies on that.
"He leaves hyperspace,"
the ship said at last.
"Where is he?"
"Hape's cluster."
"Follow him."
Perhaps he was going to enlist the Queen Mother's help. The Verpine seemed to be troubling him. That meant Lumia hadn't heard the full story about the arms deal.
"This is beneath you, Jason,"
she sighed.
"Priorities. You really can't delegate, can you? That's one thing that your grandfather could do."
Jason was heading for Hapes itself. Lumia encouraged the Sith sphere to leave more distance between them by imagining a cord stretching to a hair's thickness. Eventually, Jason reached the edge of the Hapen's security area and slipped through.
He lands. He has an entry code.
Lumia debated whether to use the code to follow him more closely, then decided against it. She didn't know if that would attract attention.
Maintain position until he leaves.
She decided to sit it out, and hoped she wasn't misjudging the situation, and that Neothel and Gasil weren't now declaring the glorious Third Republic or some such nonsense. The trouble with the small people was that they often left little in the Force for her to feel at this distance, and Coruscant's citizens were so passive and compliant that there would be no great disturbance for her to detect, even if Neothel declared martial law in Jason's absence. It was nothing that couldn't be put right on her return, but she'd have to explain why she'd been goofing off, as Ben might call it, and Jason would become petulant and uncooperative.
Jason's like a moody teenager at the moment. When he makes the transition to Sith Lord, he'll settle down fast.
And she'd be no more use to him after she found him a replacement for Ben Skywalker. Lumia accepted that her days were numbered. She lost herself in meditation, wondering who might be Jason's apprentice to come, when an explosion of feeling shook her as if she'd been grabbed by the shoulders and kissed by a total stranger. The Sith sphere reacted too, a great soaring excitement that seemed to bounce between her and the ship's bulkheads.
What's happening? Ship, what is it?
But she already knew. It was Jason, slipping out of his permanently repressed Force state and allowing himself intense, overpowering emotion for the first time in ages. The image the ship threw into Lumia's mind was one of gulping down an icy glass of water after weeks in a burning desert. The sensation was intense enough to bring Lumia to the point of gasping.
He has love, said the ship. He has loves there.
So Jason Solo had a lover.
Stupid boy.
He could have had any number of lovers. After he achieved his full power. Passion was fine. Attachment could magnify strength. But running around the galaxy for a secret assignation smacked of a teenager's total surrender to hormonal crisis.
Jason, you're 31, 32, and a grown man doesn't have to sneak light years away for a little romance, not even one in your position.
Unless. Lumia could think like Jason now, even if his more vulnerably human side caught her wrong-footed.
Hapes.
This was Hapes, and it involved something he'd kept secret even from her. His lover was part of the royal court then, the epicenter of paranoia when it came to alliances of any kind, because indiscretion often meant a blade between the ribs or a sprinkling of poison in the wine. That would explain a secret dash across hyperspace at sporadic intervals. And Queen Mother Tenel Ka was a Jedi to whom Jason had been close for years. It was conjecture, but Jason wouldn't consort with a palace maid. He was conscious of his lofty station in life. He would be drawn to a Jedi queen. Lumia risked searching the Force more closely for him to try to get an impression of exactly where he was. The sphere said he was in the palace itself, and although the tidal wave of emotion that had burst through had ebbed, it was still powerful enough to focus on. She shut out everything else, even her constant obsession, Jason's destiny, and just opened her mind to the most basic impressions. His Force presence could be strong enough to drown out everyone else's around him. Now that he thought he was unseen and undetected, his presence was as deafening as a shout. Lumia couldn't even feel the ship around her. The sense she was wrapped up in now wasn't taste or sight or sound, but touch. There was something soft, silky, and furry in her hands, Jason's hands, and it yielded when he closed his fingers. It meant nothing to her. And then she understood.
Ship, you said loves.
Two, the ship said. Yes, two.
The ship could detect force users, and it felt there were two more on Hapes. Two more whose link with Jason Solo had to be kept secret at any cost, and who would have an emotionally overwhelmed Jason clutching something soft and covered in silky fur. A toy. A soft toy. Jason had come back to the apartment with a plain package gripped tight under his arm, and left with it. He'd bought a cuddly toy for a child he loved with his entire being. Lumia snapped herself out of the connection and managed to stop short of beating her fists on the stark red deck of the sphere in sheer frustration. The ship might have taken it the wrong way.
Oh, Jason, you had a child with Tenel Ka.
Lumia now understood his fear and desperation. She thought of all the conversations she'd had with him about immortalizing his love, and suddenly realized who was in his mind when he looked so utterly tortured and desperate as she explained that he had to destroy what he loved most. It explained everything. Lumia never thought she could pity someone again enough to weep, but she found her vision blurred by tears that threatened to spill down her cheeks. She settled in for a long wait in a state of mental silence, not even wanting to occupy herself with getting to know this extraordinary ship. She'd need to be there for Jason after this. It seemed insultingly banal to kill time when he was about to make a sacrifice that almost no mundane being or Jedi would understand or forgive. Yes, it was a very high price indeed.